Hello, this is Dan Bender, executive producer of the Singles Podcasting Network. Today, I'm excited to present Single Living, a podcast that brings you straight talk on everything that concerns today's singles, including relationships, dating, travel, and financial security. Single Living is hosted by Rich Goss, a well-respected expert in the singles industry. He is the author of 8 books on dating and has lectured on the subject in over 50 colleges and universities. Rich is frequently interviewed by the news media, including Oprah, CNN, Fox News, and the Wall Street Journal, to name just a few. And now, here's the host of Single Living, Rich Goss.
My guest today is Joyce Dolberg-Rowe, who is Clinical Director for Mars and Venus Counseling Centers Worldwide. Joyce was personally trained by John Gray. She is the author of How to Find Your Soulmate. Welcome, Joyce.
Hi, so good to be here.
Thank you. Why do you think that women need more help today finding a romantic partner than any time in the past?
You know, Rich, in my book I call this an historical dilemma. From my perspective, considering my age range, in the mid-60s, you know, the birth control pill hit the market. And for the first time in history, women were able to take control of their reproductive lives. And, you know, prior to this time, girls got married out of high school. If they did go to college, they found their sweetheart in college.
I remember a statistic that back in the 1950s, I think it was 40% of all brides were pregnant on their wedding day. I mean, that's just an amazing statistic, and what you're saying is just so right on that the pill really revolutionized male-female relationships, first in the United States and then again all over the world. So anyway,
exactly.
Go ahead with your analysis here.
All right, well, so I think what happened was girls decided to go to college. You know, prior to this time, people went to, maybe they got a secretarial certificate to fall back on, because the economic arrangement in marriage was that I stay home with the children and you go to work. So girls left home, they went to college, they started careers, they delayed marriage. They moved away from their home, maybe they went from Boston to California or Florida to Montana, wherever they moved away from their support group of mothers and sisters and aunts and friends and people who helped the new couple and who helped with the child care. At any rate, as women gained economic independence, they didn't have to stay in unhappy marriages. They didn't need the support, the economic support, quite the same way, and women became less dependent on men. And I think that as part of a result of that, the divorce rate was rising. Men were not staying in relationship. Men who previously married because they were looking for sex,
yes,
that was the deal. They didn't have to do that anymore, and it just changed the face of marriage. And I think that women delayed marriage, and they missed the opportunities of high school and college. The idea that you should date around became important. Suddenly, getting married after high school or college, you were too young.
Yes.
That's my feeling, that the available pool of dating partners changed. It diminished, it became invisible, and it became more difficult.
So what's the solution?
Well, you'll have to read my book.
Well, unfortunately, people need to get a little bit of a tease here, I think, on this podcasting network. So tell us a little bit about what you think is the solution to this problem.
Well, I think that people need to find out who they are, what they want, and they need to be proactive. In other words, setting their goals. In How to Find Your Soulmate, I talk about manifesting life goals. So if your life goal is to find a soulmate and find a loving partner, you've got to set your mind to make it happen. For example, when you wanted to go to college, you spent your first 10 years of your high school or junior high school career focusing on what you needed to do to get ready to go to a good college. And, of course, kids today, it's very competitive, and that's what they're doing. Let's apply this to the dating world. Who do you want, and what do you need to do to find that person? We have dreams. We have goals. Once we know who we are, we can decide what kind of a relationship we want, and then how are we going to get it. I want to get into that as we move further along, but part of it is getting your mindset right. And that's really what I'm talking about in setting your life goals, in the correct direction, figuring out who you are, what you want, and then how you're going to manifest it.
A lot of people say that they're looking for the right person, but in your book you talk about becoming the right person. What's the difference there?
Well, when I meet people, particularly clients, come along and they say, well, they've been dating and dating, but they haven't met the right one. And I believe that you have to be a friend to have a friend, that you have to be loving and understand that people grow in loving relationships in order to become the right one. You know, often we're attracted to people who make us feel good about ourselves, but the better a person knows and loves themselves, the healthier the relationship that they bring into their life. Sometimes a girl will meet a guy and he'll be flattering to her, and so she'll go out with him and be attracted to him, but not for the reasons. He doesn't necessarily meet the checklist that she's looking for. Understanding who you are is becoming the right person.
And what is the cuddle factor?
Well, I'm glad you asked. Because so many times we enter a new relationship, and what happens? There's a lot of high passion, there's some lust, we're excited, there's endorphins, there's energy, there's intimacy, but it's not a measure of what you're going to have in a relationship with this person going forward. The cuddle factor really addresses the notion that people have different, sometimes even innate, preferences for the kind and amount of intimacy they prefer. Let me give you an example in my own life. I'm a person that likes to hold hands, and I'm a snuggler. If my husband didn't like to do that, then I would be feeling neglected at times. I would be saying, you know, I'd probably get aggravated or feel like, oh, you don't want to hold my hand, why not? I'd be feeling kind of left out, not having my needs met, and he would be feeling pressured. It's really nice when you can talk to a potential partner about how they feel about public display of affection. Because if I really want you to put your arm around me when we're walking down the street and you really don't want to, it's good for me to know that. And I also need to know how important it is to me.
And it's amazing how people get into these heavy-duty relationships, even to the point of marriage, without really discovering whether or not they're compatible in something as basic as touching and arm around each other and displays in public. I mean, it truly is amazing how little people know of each other when they get married.
You are so right. That's why I put a workbook in my book. And
yes,
it's very, very important for people to know who they are and know what they want and feel confident to have open communication about it. And this cuddle factor is key.
And why do you think that good husbands are made and not born?
Well, as you know, I'm a Mars-Venus girl.
Okay.
And I really understand very deeply on core levels the differences between men and women and their behavior in a loving relationship. In order to help a man to become really good at pleasing a woman, he sometimes needs help. Instinctively, men do what men do, women do what women do. A man's primary love need is different from a woman's primary love need, and for women, it's about the quality of the relationship. Unless I take the time to help my partner to learn how to meet my needs, then I'm not doing myself a very good service. Doing that is the greatest gift that I can give to myself. You know, unless another woman has paid her dues and taught this guy how to be a great husband,
yes,
then it's up to me to do it.
Can you go into this in a little greater depth? What do you mean by the differences between men and women? Obviously, we've all heard of the big bestseller by John Gray, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. Can you kind of elaborate a little bit about the basic difference between Mars and Venus?
Yes, certainly. What I really was referring to here, again, with the primary love needs, is that men find their primary sense of self through the quality of their ability to achieve results in the world. Their power, skill, it's what a man does. Men are action-oriented. It's what they do for women. For women, for example, their primary sense of self is defined through the quality of their relationships. How much my husband loves me, how many friends I have, how close I feel to them. One of the big differences between men and women, for example, is that women talk.
What a concept.
Yeah. Women talk about their feelings. They talk to connect emotionally. They talk to relieve stress. They like to solve problems by collaborating. You know, men, on the other hand, tend not to talk quite so much.
We tend to be the lone eagle.
That's right. They prefer to solve their problems on their own. They don't really like to talk to relieve stress. They like to again, solve their problems on their own.
Well, it's not manly to be dependent on other people, and it's certainly not manly to confess any weaknesses or problems.
That's right, but it's also not instinctive. Women have more verbal centers, multiple verbal centers on both sides of their brain. Men only have one verbal center, Rich.
Uh-huh.
And they use it primarily to convey information.
Yes.
They don't understand that women use language to connect emotionally. So, good husbands are made, not born. A man might have to learn that a woman wants to hear, hey, how was your day? And then when she says, how was your day? And he says, fine. the one-word answer,
yes.
It just doesn't, it doesn't make a woman feel close to him. John Gray calls it the golden 20 minutes, that for a guy to learn to think about his day, think about details, and share it with his partner will satisfy her so much.
Yes.
And this is one of the ways that a woman can, it's part of being a good wife or a good partner, is to understand that he's different from me, he's different from the way I am, he solves problems differently. I can't expect him to think like me or be like me. And that if a woman passes up a guy because he's not asking her questions on the first date, or he's not doing what she wants him to do, she has to be patient, she has to assume goodwill, she has to maintain humor, and she has to positively reinforce the good behavior and try not to slam him on the rough stuff.
Yes. And what can a guy do to make a woman a good wife? How does he train her?
Well, that's a good question. Most of the time, guys don't really talk about that they have these needs that have to be met. If a woman is happy, you know, the less she complains, the happier he is, the happier she is.
Yes.
So I think that the deal is when a guy learns how to listen and hears that these little things like talking or asking questions, or showing interest, or doing little romantic things on a regular basis will keep his woman's love tank full,
yes.
Then if she's happy, then he'll be happy. But if she's not feeling loved, you know, here's another Mars-Venus, and I know we're here to talk about soulmate, but a woman, my husband came up with this great analogy, that men have a savings account, and when women do nice things for their guy fills up the savings account, and he's not thinking about it for a while. But for a woman, she starts with a zero balance every day in her checking account.
Oh.
It's really, what have you done for me lately?
Wow, that's an interesting analogy. And speaking of your husband, how did you meet him?
Well, we met at a party, actually. But I was looking for my soulmate, and this was in 1988, and I had gone to see a card reader. And in my book, I tell this little story. And she said to me, my soulmate was out there. Go find him. And
right.
I went and put ads in the newspapers. And that was before computer dating.
Right.
Boy, that have been nice. And I kind of opened up. This whole book is about my process, because I opened up my heart and I started to send out those little guided visualizations and visual, you know, affirmations every day for a few minutes, and I just kind of drew him right in.
Yes.
And it's interesting. We met at a party, actually, but interestingly enough, it was about 2 years later that he shared with me that when he opened the door to that party, it was of his sister. I knew his sister. He said to himself that he was going to spend his life with me.
Really?
So that was really romantic.
Yes.
And in my book, I actually have the first poem that Brad wrote to me. So that's fun to see.
Yes.
And, you know, just to back up for 1 minute, we've all heard that, well, most of us have heard this little saying that a man marries a woman hoping she won't change, and
right.
Women marry men hoping they will.
Yes.
I think that when we talk about good husbands being made and not born, we have to remember that it comes from positive reinforcement. Asking for what we want and then being very grateful and thankful that we're getting it, it helps a person to shape their behavior.
And what is your position on sex and dating?
My position is wait, wait, and wait.
a lot of the men who are listening to this podcast are going to immediately tune out hearing that advice.
I know, but you know what? If you want a life partner, what's your hurry? Sex spoils relationships when it happens too quickly. Suddenly, women bond, then they want more, the expectations change. People stop getting to know one another in some ways once the sex happens.
And by the way, just from a man's perspective, men tend to start bonding very quickly too when the sex begins. So it really affects the relationship on both ends. It moves it to a new level. And I guess basically what you're saying is, you know, don't move to that new level until you're ready.
Really ready. That's right. And you're saying some men bond too. Some men do, and some men are just satisfying the hunger and they don't call you. That's
yes.
all they wanted anyway.
Right. You know, that's the biggest complaint that women have, single women have. They say it over and over and over again, their biggest complaint. You know, he takes my telephone number and he promises me he'll call and then he never calls. And the women just go nuts. Why didn't he call? I mean, it's just such an incredible question to women. Why would a man spend a lot of time with a woman or even sleep with a woman and then not call? It's just totally incomprehensible to a woman that a man would not call. And yet, of course, you know, men do it all the time and there's nothing shocking about it at all. And that's just another one of those Mars-Venus things that men and women come from such very different perspectives. And often that does play out in the early dates and in the early sex.
That's right. You're absolutely right. So, you know, I hear people talk about, yeah, but what about the 3-date rule?
Yes, of course. And tell our listeners about the 3-date rule, because I've heard about that so many times.
Well, a lot of my clients say to me, you know, these guys expect to have sex by the 3rd date. And if you don't put out, they don't come back. And I have my own 3-date rule.
Okay.
You should know by the 3rd date if this man is looking for a life partner. And if he isn't, see you later.
Uh-huh.
You know, next.
Yes.
It's time to meet the next guy, because if this guy is so interested in getting you in bed, then he's not really interested in getting to know you as a potential life partner.
Now, isn't it possible to have both, though? Isn't it possible for the man to have what shall we call normal needs and want to have sex with you, but at the same time also be interested in you as a potential life partner? I mean, are the two competing with one another, or are they contradicting one another?
I think sometimes the answer is yes, but timing is everything, and it really depends on whether you're meeting a guy who's really ready to settle down. But so many of these, sex is so easily available and readily available, and if a man has his hunger satisfied for that closeness, then he may not be needing to have the long-term relationship. I think the availability of sex has really interrupted people's need, a man's need to commit. And that's a big problem for women.
Well, of course, the famous saying is, why marry the cow when the milk is free?
That's correct.
And, you know, certainly the fact that sex is so readily available in today's society has really changed the whole marriage dynamic. You know, there are so many men who in the olden days would get married simply because it was the only way that he could have sex. And, of course, now he can have himself almost a harem without getting married. So it really does change the motivation, I think, of a lot of men in terms of marriage.
Now you're on my wavelength. That's what I'm thinking.
Okay, well, we're on the same planet now.
Yeah.
Now, what are some of the ways that people sabotage relationships?
Well, sad to say, there are many ways that people sabotage relationships, and one of them is staying too long with a person who you're with who has been fairly clear about not wanting a serious relationship. If years are going by, you know, what is, if this person isn't moving forward, you've got to move on. You know, women have a biological cycle. We know that. Their clock is ticking.
Yes.
And if you hook up with some guy and you're 26 years old and you think you have plenty of time and suddenly you're 32 and he's not asking you to marry him, that's terrible. And maybe he never was a good guy for you. And then it takes you 34 when you meet the next guy and now you're feeling the pressure.
Yes.
So staying too long, if somebody isn't really into you, doesn't work for you. Don't waste your time. Another thing that people do is avoid relationships by being a perfectionist. You know, unless this guy brings the right kind of flowers, calls at the right time, opens the car door, makes interesting conversation, you know, makes the dinner reservations, if he doesn't take my hand and give me the right kind of kiss goodnight, well, clearly he's not for me.
And then let's talk about the wardrobe for a second, because there are so many women out there that will immediately eliminate a man from the dating pool simply because she doesn't like what he's wearing. You know, she doesn't like his shoes, or he's wearing
That's
some polyester there. And of course, you know, polyester, I'd like to defend polyester because I think polyester is one of the great inventions in our time. Polyester enables a man to wear clothes that aren't wrinkled. I mean, what a concept.
What a concept.
And yet so many women are so negative towards men who wear polyester. I mean, would they rather that he have some really sloppy looking clothes that need to be ironed? Because let's face it, a lot of us guys are not too spiffy with an ironing board.
There
are so many women out there, and you know, here's where I get on my soapbox, I guess, but there are so many women out there, if I can play devil's advocate here, who are so judgmental. I mean, it's just incredible how, you know, he has to drive the right car, and he has to have his hairstyle the right way, and as you say, he has to open the car door in such a way and take me to the right restaurant, and he has to order the wine correctly, and you have just this incredibly long laundry list of requirements, and this poor guy has to jump through hoops in order to satisfy a woman, for him to even consider him for a second date. No, we're not even talking about jumping into bed. We're just talking about so the guy can drop another $100 on her. For him to have that privilege, he has to just go through this incredible test. And it's
now, listen, I know you're in California, right?
Yes.
And I'm in Massachusetts.
Right.
And I don't know. I think we have a different problem here.
Yes.
It could be a regional thing. I'll have to send my girls out to California.
Yeah, well, tell us a little bit about the northeastern part of the country and how you think that might be a little bit different from California. Because out here in California, especially, I hear in Southern California, and I'm up in Northern California, obviously so much superior. But in Southern California, I'm told that the women are all into what kind of car a guy drives.
Yeah, I have heard that there's a strong emphasis on materialism, and it's things are a little more, forgive the term, plastic. And,
yes.
And I don't think that we have the same thing. I'm in the Boston area, and so
yes,
there's a big intellectualism out here. It's a little bit different. I'm sure there's materialistic people, but I think that people are looking for real love, and that the perfectionist is the exception.
Uh-huh. Well, that's an interesting commentary. So you're saying you think there's a radical difference between the West Coast and the East Coast of the United States, almost as radical as the difference between Mars and Venus.
There could be. That would be an interesting study.
Well, I, you know, just talking to a lot of the women out here on the West Coast, you know, I do 150 parties a year for single people on the West Coast, so I talk to a lot of people all the time, and there really do seem to be a lot of women out here that are, you know, sound very similar to what you're talking about, women who are looking for their soulmate.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, everybody will claim that they're not superficial. I mean, you'll never run into a person who's superficial. You know, they all claim, oh, no, I'm looking for a wonderful man, and, you know, mm-hmm, I want him to be loving and giving and a good sense of humor and caring and all these wonderful things, and good in communication and shares his feelings. And the women go on and on and on about how, you know, the outside is not important. It's, you know, beauty is only skin deep, and, you know, it doesn't make any difference how much a man makes, and all these kinds of things. You hear women say all these things all the time, but if you really mm-hmm talk to these women on a more intense level, bottom line, the women I talk to, they're looking for a man who earns enough money. You know, and the key
enough
word
money
here is,
for them to right to stay home with children if they want to.
Exactly. And women are very, very defensive when you accuse them of this, and they really take it as an accusation. You know, if you suggest to a woman that the number one thing on her list is that a man earn enough money, they get very, very defensive, and immediately they think you're insulting them and you're calling them a gold digger or whatever. And the fact of the matter is, and they've done studies on this, they did a study 36 countries all over the world, you know, Pacific Islands mm-hmm and Europe and Asia and Africa and South America, North mm-hmm America, United States. They went all over the world, 36 cultures, and they found out that the number one thing that a woman is looking for in a man is that he have enough money. And it's really shocking to women hear these things, and they don't want to cop to it, but women are...
I'm not surprised by it at all.
Yes.
I think that economic security is what men have provided for women from the beginning of time.
Yes.
And that there's nothing wrong with wanting it.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with saying you want it.
Okay. Well, and conversely, men get very defensive when you suggest to them that they're superficial and that the number one thing on their list is looks. And
well,
yet,
but we know men are visual. Men have always been visual.
But they won't admit it, though. You know, everybody claims that they're looking for this wonderful relationship with their soulmate. You know, the men say the same thing. They don't usually use the word soulmate. You know, that sounds a little bit too sissy-ish. But if you talk to, but if you talk to the guys, you know, they all say, you know, I'm looking for someone special, and I want her to be a, you know, a loving person and intelligent, mm-hmm. and all these wonderful qualities. You know, they're pretty similar to a lot of the things that women say they're looking for. But sure. deep down inside, you know, I watch these guys at these parties. I do the 150 parties a year, and I watch who the guys ask to dance and who they don't ask to dance. And you know, it must be a miracle or something. But it seems like the good-looking women get asked more often than the women who are not so good-looking.
Of course.
You know, so bottom line, as you say, men are visual, and number one on the list, they're looking for somebody who looks good. And women are looking for financial security. They look for a guy who can make the mortgage payment. And we can talk about, you know, all these other qualities that people are looking for, and they certainly are, but you have to admit, I think, you know, the basic Mars-Venus difference here in terms of what men and women are looking for. Men look for looks, and women look for bucks.
It's
not politically correct to say this, and yet, you know, here we have a man and a woman on two different coasts of the United States agreeing on this, that bottom line, that's the number one thing on each sex's list.
I agree.
Well, I mean, we could almost end the podcast interview right now, but we're supposed to go a little bit longer. So let me go on to the next topic, which is actually very controversial.
That is
prenuptial agreements. Now, these are very dicey topics to raise. What do you think about prenups?
I think they're very important in today's world. You know, it's true that bringing it up might cause an argument, but so many people getting married later, they're having second marriages, third marriages, entering marriages with children or property or assets or, you know, inherited wealth, or they're going to inherit wealth, or, you know, their career is about to take off. They're worried about their financial future if the marriage doesn't work out, and they should be. You know, if somebody came along, Rich, and said to you, listen, give me all your money. I'm going to invest it in this. Give me everything you have. I'm going to invest it in over here. And 50% of the time, we lose your money.
Wow.
That doesn't feel very good, does it?
A little scary.
It's a little scary. And I think a lot of guys and some women are avoiding marriage and avoiding commitment because of it. So it makes sense. Listen, we protect ours. We buy insurance. We buy life, car insurance, health, malpractice. We buy insurance not because we plan for things to happen, bad things to happen, or we want bad things to happen. We do it because bad things sometimes happen, and we need to protect ourselves. And it shouldn't be a bad thing. It should just be a matter of fact.
Well, in the last couple of minutes of the interview, Joyce, wanted to ask you to tell us how we can get a hold of your book, How to Find Your Soulmate.
How to Find Your Soulmate is available at my website, MarsVenusBoston.com, and you can click on books and click right through to Amazon.com. I just want to add, if I may, that that part of my book is a workbook.
Yes.
And the workbook really facilitates the coaching program that I'm implementing. So that's something that's going to be available in the future as well, individual and group coaching.
Wonderful. Well, the book title is How to Find Your Soulmate. It's available on MarsVenusBoston.com. I'd like to thank my guest, Joyce Dolberg-Rowe. Single Living is a production of the Singles Podcasting Network in San Rafael, California. If you have any comments or suggestions about Single Living, feel free to email us at comments@singlespodcastingnetwork.com. Thanks for joining us today. Until next time, this is your host, Rich Goss.